Welcome back, everyone. This is week number four of the series we've been in. Before I get into the message, let me welcome everyone that's joining us online. Thank you for joining us every week. It's going to be a great day today. I want to invite you right now to pull your message notes out. You've got all the scripture there, the fill in the blanks to follow along with today's message. In fact, if you like collecting the message notes, we have three ring binders available at the Info Center where you can collect them all and keep them in order and neat and organized, where you can kind of go through them throughout the year and see. It's great to review throughout the year. Let me remind you, the best notes to take on Sunday are not the things that I say. Because you can listen to the podcast or you could watch the video again. You can get what I say again. The best notes to take every Sunday is what the Holy Spirit is saying to you about what I'm saying. Because sometimes he'll give you stuff that I don't even say. Like, and the best notes you'll take is what he's speaking personally to you about the message. Because he'll bring it home and make it real. And he'll make it personally apply to your situation better than I can. And so those are the best types of notes to take. Well, let's jump into the foundation verse for the series. It comes from chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. Solomon, Song of Songs. Solomon was King David's son. He was the third king of Israel. He wrote, according to 1 Kings, over 1,000 different songs. This was the best one out of all of them. This was the Song of Songs. And in this book, there are three different people who speak throughout the book. There's Solomon. There's his beloved, the girl, the wife, and then there's this chorus of friends who kind of represent the world. They chime in at different points throughout the book, and we've been going through this verse by verse for the last few weeks. Solomon's Song of Songs, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. And that's the goal of this entire series. We want to teach you how to be great lovers, not just physically, but lovers in every area of your life. We want you to love in such a way that your love is more delightful than wine, that people around you say, nobody parents like them. Nobody is a husband like him. Nobody is a wife like her. Nobody treats people the way they treat people. They are a delight to be around. And it goes on to say, pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes. In other words, the way that Solomon loved people spread. It spread. In your name is always symbolic of reputation in the Bible. His reputation is like perfume poured out. So her conclusion was, no wonder all the girls want you. Like, anybody would want to be with a guy like you. Anybody would want to be a wife like you. Anybody would want to be a mother, a father, the way you are. It makes sense. And so we're studying this book. There's 8 chapters in Song of Songs, 6 primary themes over the 8 chapters. Week number 1, we dealt with the art of attraction. What do you look for in the opposite sex? What do you need to do to be attractive to the opposite sex? And for those of us that are married, what do we need to do to maintain our attractiveness? And it's not what you think. It's not physical is actually at the bottom of the list. There are much more important things that we need to work on than just physical beauty. So that was week number 1. Week number 2, we dealt with the world's version of dating, which I feel has devastated our country. The reason divorce is so rampant in America is because we're practicing a system of dating that doesn't work. In fact, we're actually preparing our young people for divorce with the current model of dating that we've adopted in the world. It's not biblical at all. God has a different way to go about things, and his way works. It would be different if this was just an alternative, but the problem is the world's way doesn't work at all. Look at the statistics. Look at the results. It's just not working. God has a way that absolutely works. And then last week, that was the most PG-13 message of them all. It was the honeymoon night. God gives us an entire chapter in the Bible dedicated to this couple's sex life and showed us what hot, passionate sex should look like the standard of sex. So if you missed any one of the first 3 messages, I cannot encourage you enough to watch them online, listen to them. Very, very foundational. Because if you get this area of your life right, relationships, it'll be like the best thing that you will ever learn. So now they're out of the honeymoon season. They're kind of coming into just being this newlywed couple, and they get into their first fight. We see their first tension, the first bit of conflict. So today, let's get ready to rumble. This is what's going to go on. as we move into the reality of relationships. So we're going to start with chapter 5, pick back up at verse 2. Last week we ended with verse 1. She says, I slept, but my heart was awake. In other words, she's at home and he's not there, and she can't sleep because her heart is racing. Her mind is racing. He's out late. He's supposed to be home and he's not home. You know, he either got caught at work, he's, you know, out with the guys, he's playing softball, whatever he's doing, he's just not at home. And she was expecting him to be home, and now she's getting madder by the second. Like, she's angry now because he's not where he's supposed to be. And now we see the beginning of some tension, some conflict in the relationship. And here's the thing, all relationships will have conflict. The only relationships that don't have conflict are people who are dead. Like you don't fight when you're dead. Like, if you're alive, or there are some relationships where the husband and wife have just kind of given up on marriage and they're just two roommates living together, and I suppose they don't really have a whole lot of conflict. But any normal marriage, normal relationship is going to have conflict. The goal is not to not have conflict. Here's the goal, and it's what we're going to talk about today. How do we fight right? Like, we're going to fight in marriage. So we got to figure out, how do we fight right? And we all do. Like, Amanda and I fight. I think I feel like I'm an expert at this subject material because of, you know, all the fights that we've been in over the last almost 12 years of marriage. Especially during the first couple years, we used to fight a lot during the beginning of our marriage. And she would always do this certain thing that would just drive me crazy. Like, I cannot stand to be tickled. And she would take her fingernails and dig them right into my ribs. And I hate that. And I told her one day when we first got married, I said, you do that again, I'll break your finger. Like, I told her. And sure enough, she tickled me again. And sure enough, her finger was broken. Now, before you assume the worst, like, you need context. Context changes a story. So let me give you some context. We were on the couch cuddling, you know. It was like one of those and then all of a sudden, she decided, like, in this moment of just, like, you know, love and gentleness and cuddleness, she decides to tickle me. And I jerked, and then, like, fingers right into my ribs, and I go rolling off the couch backwards because it's like, you know, I'm just reacting, and it's like knee-jerk reaction, and I did not know her hand was caught under me when I go rolling off the couch. So I rolled right over her thumb, and I said, I told you so. Now I've got to be careful because she's been going out with some of the marksmen in the church, and she's been training at the gun range, and she's now, they tell me she's a very good shot, and so now I've got to be on my best behavior because she can shoot me now, so I won't be good at home. But what I want to do today is I want to help you make some pre-fight decisions. Now, we're going to focus this predominantly on marriage, but you need to understand, you can apply this to any relationship. You can apply this to parenting. You can apply this to you know, your children, to your parents, to your brothers, your sisters. This will help you in any relationship in your life. So let's jump back into it. I slept, but my heart was awake. Listen, my lover is knocking. Now, she decides she's going to ignore him because he's out late and he didn't show up for dinner and she's not happy. And he shows up at the door. Now, this is him speaking, open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my flawless one. Like, he's pulling it all out right now, isn't he? Like, every pet name he has for her, he is trying to sugar her up, butter her up. What do you think he's after right now? Like, come on, let's be honest. What do you think he's looking for? What does he want right now? Yeah, exactly. Like, he's home late. He's been out all day, and he's kind of in the mood, and he's coming home. He's looking for some loving. My head is drenched with dew, baby. I want some love. And she's not having it. Like, nope, you didn't show up for dinner. You're not, I mean, don't think you can just come home late at night and get whatever you want. She's not, like, he wanted some. She's not interested. And honestly, this happens to me all the time. Like, I've got to tell Amanda constantly, baby, I'm just tired tonight. Notice she's not here this morning. That won't be in the 5 o'clock message tonight. Let's move on. She says, I've taken off my robe. Must I put it on again? I have washed my feet. Must I soil them again? That's Hebrew for I've got a headache. That's literally what it is. So he gets a little mad. He's a little frustrated because he's not getting what he wants. And it says, my lover thrust his hand through the latch opening. He put his hand through the door. Now, when you study this, theologians kind of have two different interpretations of this. I've looked at kind of both sides, both arguments. I haven't really made up my mind, but one interpretation is he got mad because he's not getting what he wants, and he's, you know, kind of throwing a fit, and he kind of put his hand through the wall. Another interpretation is no, he wasn't necessarily mad. He was kind of calm and collective. He's just kind of showing her what she could have had. Like here's what you could have had, and then he's gone. He's out there. I don't know. I just think he's a typical guy. I think he didn't get what he was looking for, got a little mad, put his hand through the wall, and then he kind of splits. He takes off. And she starts having kind of a change, she decides she's going to concede. She's going to respond to him. And it says, my heart began to pound for him. I arose to open for my lover, and my hands dripped with myrrh. Myrrh was lotion. And she put the myrrh on basically as a symbol, as a sign to say, okay, you know, open for business. If, you know, come on in, we'll have some fun. And she says, my fingers flowing with myrrh on the handles of the lock. So she put a little myrrh on the door handle so that he knew that the invitation was there, that you know, she was willing. And then she says, I opened for my lover, but my lover had left. He was gone. So we see here the silent treatment. Like, he's mad, he's throwing a fit, he takes off. And she says, my heart sank at his departure. I looked for him but did not find him. I called him, but he did not answer. And so we got their first fight, their first conflict, their first, you know, their newlyweds. It's not perfect like they thought it was. So before we go any further and before we dive into how they resolve this thing, first, I need you to buy into a concept today. A concept of handling relationships God's way. Because if you can learn this, you will be successful at all relationships. But again, let's focus this on marriage today for the married people and for the future married people. First off, I need you to understand the phases of marriage if this is going to make sense. Here's the phases of marriage. The first phase of marriage is what we call the honeymoon season. The honeymoon season. Now, when you study this word honeymoon, it comes from two words, honey, something sweet that you eat. Moon is a 30-day period. It's literally a month. Literally what this word means is sweet month, like sweet month. It was nice for a month. Like, she was perfect for a month. It was great for a month. And then after 30 days, like, you thought you married Cinderella, and now you're waking up next to Cruella de Vil, and you're thinking, what in the world just happened? And what happens is it moves you into the second phase of marriage. It's what we call disillusionment. I found out some stuff that you didn't show me while we were dating. Like you didn't act like this when we were dating. Where's all this stuff coming from? And most relationships never survive the second phase of marriage. And here's the problem. Ultimately, you will get another illusion. You'll get another illusion. You'll get the illusion that there is someone out there who is Mr. Right, who is Mrs. Perfect. And what happens is we begin to buy into this right person myth that if I marry the right person, everything will be right. And the reason we're fighting is because we made a mistake. And the reason we're fighting is because I didn't marry the right person, because if I married the right person, we wouldn't be fighting. And we buy into this myth. We buy into a lie. That's why many marriages don't survive the second phase. The only way to succeed, the goal, is to get past the disillusionment phase and get us into the third phase, which is commitment. Commitment. And the next 3 weeks, we're gonna explore through the rest of this story how they develop this committed relationship to each other. They actually become a model couple that even in their fighting, they model how to do it the right way. And the reason why they settled the fight that we just read about is they made a commitment to their relationship. What they did was they made pre-fight decisions that I'm going to show you. They made some decisions that before we get into a fight, here's my decision. Here's how I'm going to respond to future conflict. Because here's the truth. Choices lead, feelings follow. You make a decision. You make a choice how you're going to handle yourself, because in the heat of the moment, your feeling is going to want to run the opposite direction. And you just got to decide, I'm not going to allow the fight that I'm in the middle of to dictate who I am, but I'm going to be a person of principle. I'm going to be a person of character. And I've decided this in every relationship of my life. I've decided this with my staff, with my son, with my wife, that I'm just going to decide ahead of time. When this happens, this is how I'm going to respond, so that the heat of the moment doesn't force my response. And so in the text, what you're going to see today is three pre-fight decisions this couple models. This couple makes that changes the dynamic of their relationship. And in fact, the world throws a party at the end for the way they handle this. The world looks at them and says, well done. Nobody handles conflict like that. Nobody handles fights like that. And they love the way they do it. So first off, as we get into the message, I want you to remember the ground rules of this series. Ground rule number one is listen, especially married people, listen for yourself. Don't listen for your spouse. No elbows. No, you know, like I told you, this is the problem with our marriage. You need to listen. This is exactly what I've. No. Don't do that today. Let God speak to your spouse. You hear what God wants to say to you. Ground rule number two is don't focus on the past. Every time we hear God's standard, it's painful at times, because we look at our life and look at our past and look at regrets and mistakes. And it's easy to beat ourselves up. No, we don't focus on the past. There's grace. There's healing available. We're going to fight for the future. And then the third rule for today is I need you to understand this. I need you to understand this third rule. And it's that normal people can't do this. Normal people can't pull this off. What I'm teaching you today is for godly people. It does not work without God. This is not a marriage seminar with good psychology and self-help. This takes God to pull off. You can't do any of this without his help. We need the supernatural in our life. And again, don't let that word intimidate you. It just means you need something beyond your natural ability, because to submit to one another is not natural. What's natural is being selfish and self-centered. That's what comes easy, and you're going to have to go beyond that to make this work, which means you need God in your life to pull this off. You cannot pull these off without his help. So let's jump into it. We're going to skip down to chapter 6 now, beginning in verse 1. Now all of her friends, the chorus, the world, they kind of chime in sarcastically. Where has your lover gone, most beautiful of women? I thought your relationship was perfect. You said you had it all together. Obviously, it's not perfect, is it? Like you know, you ain't who you think you are you? I mean, they're just kind of being very sarcastic with her now. Which way did your lover turn that we may look for him with you? And she says, no, you're misunderstanding. Actually, my lover responded the right way. And here's what she says. My lover has gone down to his garden. And I'm going to explain that in a moment. But what that shows us is his consistency. Shows us consistency to the bed of spices, to browse in the gardens, and to gather lilies. Now, he's not a florist. What this means is he simply didn't overreact to the situation. What this means is he let his spirit settle down. His garden was very likely his place of prayer, his place of meditation. So instead of handling this the way most people would handle it, he went to his place of prayer, he went to his place of meditation, and he allowed his spirit to calm down. Instead of getting angry, instead of blowing up, instead of being mean, instead of doing what many other men would do, he retreats to his garden. And her response is, I'm attracted to that. Like, I like that. And she says, I am my lover's, and my lover is mine. And he browses among the lilies. In other words, he doesn't act like all the other guys. He doesn't react the way most men would react. Now, honestly, this challenges me. When I was studying this week and preparing it this week, this really convicted me, because I'm a type A person, and like I know what I want, and I can be very, very aggressive if I don't get what I want. Like if I get told no, if things don't go my way, it's and then on top of being type A, I'm very good with my words. Like this ability to communicate is a blessing to many people, but you turn it on its backside and it's a curse. And I've got to be honest, there are times where I have literally destroyed my wife with my words because I can win an argument. Like I am trained to use this tongue. And it is a blessing for God, but man, when I use it selfishly, it is damaging. And that's the truth. And see, most guys, the way they react is they either get really aggressive or they get really passive, and both are wrong. How did Solomon react? See, here's the first pre-fight decision I'm asking you to commit to. And here's what Solomon did. I will act, not react. I will act based on who I am, not react based on the situation. See, the word react means to reenact what the other person has done. And that's the pattern of the world that we live in. We live in this world that has this unhealthy judgment thing where if you, then I. And then if you do, then I'm going to do. And it just, you know, we keep one-upping each other to the point where it escalates and it blows our marriage apart. And it's unhealthy. And it's killing us. And so we either get loud and aggressive, or some of us men, and this is my other problem, is I can be the king of the silent treatment. I mean, how many know, like, we can, like, us men, we get really good at the silent treatment. Like, we can withdraw, we can shut down, we can pull back, and it's just miserable, especially, like, you know, at night when you're going to bed and you're in the middle of that silent treatment fight. How many of you have been there where you get in bed and you, like, crawl all the way to your edge of the bed? Like, you're hanging on, like, she's not getting a toe. Like, I'm not even going to give her a toe. And like, we're just, like, hanging on the edge of the bed, and I'm like, well, you're not getting any of this. And I used to think that was punishment. Like you know, her not getting any of this was like punishment. I found out it wasn't punishment. Like, she was fine. And so you're sitting in bed and you're not asleep and you want to make sure the other person knows that you're not asleep. You're just still in the silent war. And so you're like, you know, on one side of the bed, and the other person then wants to let you know that they're not asleep yet. And it's just like, you know, I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it's just horrible. Remind me of a couple that were fighting. They're in the middle of the silent treatment war, and he was not going to give in. And so he, you know, the next day he had to get up at 5 a.m. to catch a flight for a very important business meeting, but he wasn't going to give in. So he wrote a little note, put it on her pillow at night. I've got a very important meeting. I need to be awake at 5 a.m. The next morning, he wakes up at 9 a.m. He oversleeps. He misses his flight. Like, he's angry. He's furious. He's about to go downstairs, let his wife have it. And all of a sudden, on his pillow, he sees a note. It's 5 a.m. Wake up. Am I speaking to anyone that loves Jesus today? I mean, am I speaking to people of God? As people of God, we do it differently. And I'm telling you, I was convicted this week. I made a fresh commitment this week that because I have a tendency to overreact, I want to become more like Solomon. I want to go browse among the lilies. Now, here's a verse that really messed me up. And here's the reason it messed me up, because I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian. And according to 1 Corinthians, I am to be transformed into the image of Christ. I'm going to be transformed into his image. Christ, in other words, is the standard for me. And that's not an unattainable standard. With his power and with his spirit, it is reachable. So let me show you a verse, and especially men. I want you to filter this verse through your marriage. Think about this. This is the standard. Jesus is the standard for our life. When they hurled their insults, how did Jesus react? He did not retaliate. When he was being insulted, he did not retaliate. That's the standard for us in our marriage. When he suffered, he made no threats. We got to get rid of the threatening in our marriage, especially threatening of divorce. We pull that card out whenever it's convenient. We got to get rid of the threats. Instead, Jesus entrusted himself to him, his Father, who judges justly. I'm calling every one of us who are followers of Jesus to commit to responding this way. What is the proper response? Love and respect. Paul said, husbands, love your wives. Wives, respect your husbands. When me and Amanda are in the middle of a fight, we're in the middle of a conflict, she still needs to know that I love her. She needs to know that this fight doesn't impact my love for her. Love is an unconditional commitment to an imperfect person. And women, you need to understand that a man needs respect. You don't have to like what he just did. But there is a respectful way to fight with him. There is a respectful way to have conflict. We need to get rid of the disrespect. And here's the truth I'm asking you to buy into. I will not react to my mate. I will respond to God. I'm not going to react to the situation. I'm not going to react to my spouse. I'm going to respond to God. Why? Because my wife is not my Lord. Amanda did not go to a cross for me. She does not have nail scars in her hand. You look at Solomon in the story. Solomon, how would every other guy react? They'd be angry. Well, Solomon, how are you going to react? Loving. Loving. Why? You just got shut down. And here's Solomon's response. He says, my mate and my feelings do not control my actions. I've submitted myself to the Lord Jesus Christ. See, you're not told to change your mate. You're told to obey your God. So forget what they're doing right now. And ask yourself the question, are you reacting or are you responding to God? Let's move on. Let's look at the next pre-fight decision that this couple made. In verse 4, this is Solomon speaking. He says, you are beautiful, my darling. Wait a second, they're in the middle of a fight. Like, what's he saying? They're in the middle of a fight. You're beautiful, my darling, as Tirzah, lovely as Jerusalem, majestic as troops with banners. In fact, if you go back to chapter 5, we didn't read it. If you read the rest of chapter 5 after they got into the fight, after he goes down and browses among the lilies, the rest of chapter 5, she goes through and lists all the things she loves about Solomon. She makes a list of all of his good qualities. And now here Solomon is in the middle of a fight saying, you're beautiful. And if you read the next couple verses 5-8, we're not going to read them because we read them last week. They're literally the exact same words that he used last week during the honeymoon night. Like word for word, in the middle of the fight, things are heating up a little bit. Like they're getting passionate. And then if we drop down to verse 9, he says something that really jumped out at me. He says, my dove, now look at this. In the middle of a fight, middle of a conflict, my perfect one is unique. My perfect one is unique. See, he's making a decision to see her in the middle of this fight as perfect. And then he says she's unique, which is a nice way to say she's totally opposite of me. Like that's not how I would do it. That's not how I would handle it. That's not how I would. But he's making a decision to see her as unique, as different, as perfect. Now, my wife and I are total opposites. Like in every way, we are total opposites. If I'm hot, she's cold. If I'm cold, she's hot. If I want to save, she wants to spend. If I want to spend, she wants to save. If I want to discipline our son, she wants to give him grace. If I want to give him grace, she wants to discipline. We are total opposites. And the truth is that can irritate the fire out of you. Like that can frustrate you, or you can realize that, you know what? I need you. I need your point of view. I need your uniqueness. You see things different than me because you compliment me in every way. See, godly people realize that you're different, and I'm okay with that. Like I'm okay with the fact that you're different from me, that you don't think the way I think. And let me be honest, you'd hate living with me because so I got to be honest with myself sometimes and realize that it's not easy to live with me. Like, I'm borderline OCD in some areas. Like, I can't drive my car with trash in it. Like if there's trash in my car, I've got to find a gas station, find a trash can, remove it from my vehicle to be able to drive in peace. Like, if I eat something, I've got to, like I can't continue the trip in peace without finding a trash can and getting it out of the car. It's just, I don't know. It's just something about me. Another thing is I love receipts. Like, I file every receipt. Like, I've got filing systems for receipts. Like, receipts matter. The world revolves around receipts. It really does. Like, I may have to prove one day that I paid 95 cents for that donut and I need documentation. Like, I need the proof. My wife doesn't feel the same way about receipts that I feel about receipts. Like, I get into her car, there's receipts everywhere, in the door and under the seat. I'm like, how can you be so careless with the receipt? This is like financial documents stuffed under your, and it drives me crazy. And I've got to decide, am I going to focus on that receipt, or am I going to look at the 10,000 reasons why she is absolutely amazing? Like, I've got a choice. I can either hate the fact that she is not like me, or I can thank God for the fact that she's not like me. I'm telling you right now, if there was two of me in our house, my son would be dead right now. Like, it would be bad news. God knew exactly what he was doing by bringing me somebody that completed me. That's everything I'm not. So here's the second pre-fight decision. We see godly people choose that I'm going to focus on the good, not the bad. And this is so important because in the middle of a fight, you just want to focus on all the reasons that you're mad and what you don't like about. I'm telling you right now, next time you get in a fight, go force yourself to make a list of the 10 things you love about your spouse. And I tell you, that fight will dissolve quickly. Like, if you force yourself to redirect your thinking, because when you're mad, it's easy to think about all the things you hate. See, in the middle of this conflict, he made a decision. My perfect one is unique. He decided to see her perfectly. Make a choice to focus on good, not bad. It's powerful. Paul says it like this in Philippians. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy about my spouse, think about such things. Meaning, don't think about the other things. Think about the good stuff. They interviewed Billy Graham's wife years ago, Ruth Graham, about their marriage. It was in the height of the ministry. Billy had just done 17 weeks on the road preaching the gospel in crusades. At the height of his ministry, he would be gone 7 months out of the year. And they asked Ruth Graham, doesn't that frustrate you? Don't you get angry? Aren't you upset that he's gone so much so that you only get him 5 months out of the year? And here's how she responded. She said, 5 months with Billy is better than 12 months with anyone else. She made a decision. She made a choice. People of God choose to focus on good, not on bad. Let's look at the third and the final principle we see in the story. He now says, I went down to the grove of nut trees to look at the new growth in the valley to see if the vines had budded or the pomegranates were in bloom. What this tells us is that a season has passed. They survived winter. They survived their first conflict, their first fight. And then he says, before I realized it, it dawned on me, my desire set me among the royal chariots of my people. And that's been a hard phrase to interpret for many people. When you study it in the Hebrew, it kind of throws you a little bit because he's talking about his mind here. What he's saying is my mind is set. My mind is fixed. I'm not entertaining any other thoughts. I'm not looking for a way out of this relationship. There's no open door. My mind is set. She is the one. And we're going to get through whatever conflict we face because we're making a decision that my mind is set. And then it says the royal chariot, which is the symbol of reconciliation. And so he says, come back, O Shulamite, come back, come back. The word Shulamite, this is the first time this word is mentioned in the Bible. The word Shulamite is the feminine version of the word Solomon. What is he doing? He's giving her his name. He's saying, you belong to me. You're with me. You see, what they're doing here is they're not focused on winning. The goal is not to win. Like, you can win the fight with your spouse and still lose. How many of you understand what I'm saying? Like, the goal is resolution. It's not personal victory. It's not getting your way. It goes on to say that we may gaze on you. And now the chorus of friends chime in. The world chimes in and says, why would you gaze on the Shulamite as on the dance of Mahanaim? Now, the dance of Mahanaim basically tells us they threw a party. This was a celebration. They didn't expect them to handle the conflict so well. They didn't expect them to fight so well. And so they threw a party at the way they handled conflict. Now look, I know the reality is that a 30-minute message isn't going to change all of your problems. It's not going to solve everything for you. But what I'm asking you to do today is that you would open yourself up to the power of God, which can absolutely change your situation and change you. I'm asking you that before the fight ever happens, you make some pre-fight decisions. That you decide, I'm going to be a man of God. I'm going to be a woman of God. I'm not going to allow the situation to determine how I react. But I'm going to allow my character and my conviction. I will not reenact what you did. And I'm not going to focus on the bad. I'm going to focus on the good. Yes, I want the receipt, but my relationship is more important. I mean, look, I realize that I'm this weird thing that you know, just probably there should be nobody else like me, but I've come to terms with the fact that life is so much happier without the receipt. It just is. And so we've got to decide, I will resolve this. I will respond to the situation like Christ as my standard. So what you see the couple doing here, by him calling her Shulamite, by saying, my mind is set, not based on how I feel, not based on how I'm treated, my mind is set. Here's the third decision this couple made. I will talk, not walk. I'm never going to give up on this relationship. I am committed. And again, Jesus is our standard. Look at this in Ephesians 5. Husbands. So I'm gonna direct this to the men for a moment. Husbands, love your wives. Well, how do we do it? I'll tell you. Just as Christ loved the church. That's how we're to love our wives. So let me ask you a question. How did Christ love the church? How did Christ love the church? He stayed. He stayed on that cross when it didn't feel good. He stayed on the cross when he was mistreated, when they spit on him, when they cursed him. He stayed on that cross. He could have called down legions of angels to rescue him. But he stayed. He stayed because he loved you. And he says, husbands, that's how I want you to love your wife. Sean McDowell's a friend of mine. His father is Josh McDowell, the famous Christian author, wrote the book More Than a Carpenter. Brilliant, brilliant guy on parenting and family, and which is quite amazing because he had the worst childhood you could imagine. I was in Sean's wedding, and I remember the week of the wedding, we were having a lot of dinners with the family and celebrations, and I was with Josh one night, and I asked him, I said, did you ever yell at Sean growing up? Because this is like, you know, brilliant parenting guy. Did you ever yell at your son? He said, one time. I yelled at Sean one time. He was about 6 years old. He came home from school. and came into my office, said, "Dad, can I ask you a question?" Said, "Sure, Sean." "Dad, are you ever going to leave Mom?" That was the question. "Are you ever going to leave Mom?" Josh picked up his 6-year-old son, took him to the corner of the office, put him in a chair. He said, "I stood over Sean, and I looked at him. I said, Sean, I will never, ever leave your mother." So the only time I've ever yelled at my son. He said, when I got done, Sean jumped up, said, "Thanks, Dad," and walked out. Makes a lot of sense if you study psychology. See, 20 years ago, psychologists told us that a child's sense of self-esteem and identity and security came from knowing that my mom and dad loves me. It's not true anymore. Today, psychologists will tell you that a child's sense of self-esteem, identity, security doesn't come from knowing mom and dad loves me, comes from knowing dad loves mom. And mom loves dad. Why? Because they go to school with kids who don't have a mom or don't have a dad living at home. And every time you get in a fight, they deal with anxiety and fear, wondering, am I going to end up like them? I am begging you as people of God to commit to this. And look, some of you, you've been through divorce. And I know the sinking feeling that you have right now. It doesn't feel good. I get it. I get it. Remember the rules. We're focused on the future, not on the past. Are you asking me to stay in a miserable relationship for the rest of my life? No, what I'm asking you to do is to consider something you've never had before. It's the power of commitment, the work of God in your life that could change everything. And look, there are, and let me just give the disclaimer, there are situations where you're physically in danger. You're not safe physically. I'm not talking about staying and being a doormat. I'm not saying divorce is your first step, but I'm saying you need to separate and get to a safe place and then figure out from there, and we will help you. I'm talking to the vast majority of people here today that you're ready to walk because you're not getting your needs met, or you're not happy, or you know it's your selfishness, whatever it is. I'm not talking about physical violence here. And I know some of you are thinking, man, what you're asking out of me is impossible. Yeah, it probably is. It probably is impossible unless you know how to do it. So let me end with this, 1 John 4. Whoever does not love. That's the problem right now in America. That's the reason we have so much divorce right now in America. It's because we got a bunch of people who don't know how to love. They love on their own terms. They love only when their needs are being met. They don't understand love is not a feeling, it's a commitment, it's an action. And they don't know how to love. And I'll tell you why they don't know how to love, because they don't know God. That's the problem. They don't know. They think they know God, but they don't know God, because if they knew God, they knew how to love. Because God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world. Now here's the power, that we might live through him. Meaning, this is possible. You can live with God's power to do this stuff. In the natural, you can't pull this stuff off. Through him, you can pull it off. Like, you can love. You can commit. This is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. What that means is this is available to you. So you can't reason this away saying, well, that's talking about good people. No, it's talking about any forgiven person. And every one of us can be forgiven. Not one of us can sin past his forgiveness. Dear friends, since God so loved us, since God loved us, we also ought, or in other words, we can. We have the ability to love one another. Because God loved you, you have the ability to love your wife. Because God loved you, you have the ability to love your husband. This is possible. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not saying this is an exercise everybody needs to do, but I've done this exercise. I've played out in my mind worst case scenario. Like I've built it out of my mind, worst case scenario. If Amanda does, worst case scenario, I've already made the decision how I'm going to respond. I've already made the decision. It may be hell. It may be painful. I will find a way to forgive. I will find a way to work through it. I've already made the decision. I don't have to make the decision if it ever happens. The decision has been made. Why? Because I'm a person of honor and I'm a person of character. I'm not going to allow my feelings to dictate my decisions. And I'm asking our church to make a commitment to God. Don't respond to your mate. Respond to God. The covenant you made was not with one another. The covenant you made on your wedding was with God. When you said, I do, you didn't say, I do to each other. You said, I do to God. In the wedding ceremony, the couple says, I do to the minister who is representing God, meaning you made a covenant with God, not each other. And God did not break his end of the deal. I'm a little fired up today because I'm hurting by what I'm seeing in America. But it's time we get some old-fashioned preaching in the churches today. That we make a stand for what is right and for what is true. And we get rid of this consumerist, selfish, modern culture where it's all based on how I feel and how I'm treated. Let's get back to conviction and principles in our life again. Would you close your eyes with me before we leave? I said at the very beginning of this message, you can't pull any of this off without Jesus. It doesn't work without his power in your life. It's only through him that we have the ability to love. And so if you're here today and you're visiting our church family, this could be your first time in a Christian church. What I'm going to ask you to do right now is give your life to God. Give your life to Jesus. Open the door of your heart. Let him come inside. Take control and give you the ability to do what you cannot do on your own. For some of you, it'll be the first time you've ever invited Jesus to be a part of your life. And then there's others of you today, I'm asking you to renew your commitment to Jesus. It's time to renew yourself. Because for whatever reason, Jesus isn't at the top of your list anymore, and it's time to give him the place that he rightfully deserves in your life. And so before we leave this morning, I'd like to pray for either group of people. A simple prayer of saying, Jesus, I invite you to take control of my life. Now, I'm not going to ask you to stand up. You don't have to walk anywhere. You don't even have to pray this out loud. You just pray this in your heart. God will listen and respond to your heart today. If you're here this morning and you would say, that's me. I need to say this prayer. I need to invite Jesus to be the center of my life with every eye closed out of respect. And just so that I know who's joining me, would you very quickly just raise your hand and then put it right back down. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Is there anyone else? Just raise it, put it right back down. The prayer is very simple. In your heart right now, just say, Jesus, today I give you my life. Take control. I know that means things are going to change, but I give you permission to rearrange my life to reflect your number one. Forgive me of the sin that separated me from you. Thank you for your forgiveness. Thank you for your grace. And most of all, thank you that you will never hold my past against me. In Jesus' name, amen.